the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. Recording on a Tuesday night, episode 463 with Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, we are breaking down this game that I thought, I mean, oh my gosh, that this is the game that the Cardinals can win. And for one half a play, we're like, oh yeah, okay, this is not the worst team in the league. And I still don't think it's the worst team in the league, no matter what people are saying. Like, just you watch the football, the Chicago Bears are worse, the Houston Texans are worse, the Carolina Panthers are worse. The Cardinals are not the worst team in football. But then they did a worst team in football type thing, losing the second half. 31-8. What in the world? Let's start with that. In this edition of the show, we're going to talk about, well, what in the heck happened? There was good. We're going to talk about injury impacts and, you know, looking at the schedule, where are they going to get that first win? So, Seth, what happened on Sunday?
You know, I wrote about it a little bit, and at the end of the day, you know, I there's a saying, it's Jimmy's and Joe's and not X's and O's. And that's kind of what came to fruition, right? Like, the team with just more talent won out. You know, you look at it, the New York Giants on defense have Dexter Lawrence, Leonard Williams, Kayvon Thibodeau, you know, they're Deontay Banks and Xavier McKinney and Adoree Jackson. And then their linebackers with Bobby Okereke and who is their other good linebacker? McFadden, right? That's the other guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys are just, you know, a lot of them are just better than a lot of the guys on the Cardinals offense. You know, Elijah Wilkinson had another, you know, so game. And that's probably being generous. I mean, I think he had two penalties and gave up a sack in this one. Yelda Froholt again, you know, the snaps are good. He's decent in run blocking, but he and Wilkinson really both are struggling in pass pro. And so, you know, that allows a guy like Dexter Lawrence just to kind of take over a game. And you know, I talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast or I think we did, but I wrote about it. I said, if you can take one player from the Giants and put him on the Cardinals, it's Dexter Lawrence with a bullet. Like, that guy is just a game wrecker, and you saw it, right? Like, he was just phenomenal. And it just, I mean, it's, and Josh Dobbs played the best game of his career, and it still really wasn't enough. And that's just, I mean, and that's what it comes down to is, you know, when the other team has the superior talent at a number of positions, it's going to went out that way. And I think that's how it went down. And, you know, I think if I told you, you know, we didn't know when the podcast we recorded on Thursday night and obviously you posted Friday, we didn't know that it was for sure Buda Baker wasn't going to play. So if I would have told you that no Buda Baker, you would have been like, oh, they're going to lose. Like, there wouldn't have even been a question, right? Like, we're just
right.
Like, oh, they're going to lose. And that, I mean, it just kind of came out. Like, that's unfortunately what happened. And you look at it and, you know, I thought, especially scheme-wise, they looked great in the first half. In the second half, the Giants made adjustments and the Cardinals couldn't counter those adjustments because, again, they just don't have the talent to do so.
And things got, like, they haven't been able. So that those are two games they should have won. And these are some numbers I got. So I could have put them together, but Howard Balzer over at PHNX, he put them together already. So these are some really bad these are some really bad numbers when it comes to the fourth quarter. If we take out the three plays in the final 19 seconds of the game that included, you know, Michael Wilson's 19 yards, and then after that it was nothing. So the Cardinals have run 24 fourth quarter plays for 42 yards. Josh Dobbs in two games is 7 for 11 for 25 yards in the fourth quarter. James Conner, his final six rushes totaled 3 yards. And it's like things just stopped offensively. Things that they were doing well just stopped. They were moving the ball well. They were running the ball well. You know, and even there were a couple plays that you wish that they had back. If Dobbs doesn't just plain miss a wide open Zach Ertz, that would have been a touchdown. The game's over. You can also look at, you know, Matt Prater missing a 55-yarder. You can't expect that out of him. Like, 55-yarders are going to get missed sometime. You know, that was a difference maker in the game. But it's like everything that went well, you're looking at, oh, look, this is the best case scenario. So the Cardinals can be, and at the same time, I was looking at the Giants saying, see, I told you they're not that good. And then they put 31 points up on the second half. Daniel Jones looked great. Basically, the Cardinals couldn't do anything defensively. And then,
well, and it doesn't help, and I know we're going to get to it, but it doesn't help when your number one corner is literally the worst player on your defense in that game.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Marco did not look good, period.
That might have been the worst game he's played as a professional. Like, that was legitimately an awful game.
Yeah, and, you know, what happened? Marco was bad. They can't – and that's the thing. Jonathan Gannon, like, the one thing he preached, you cannot give explosives. And when you get toasted for a 58-yard bomb down the field early in the game, like, this is – you were getting pretty solid play from everyone across the board defensively, and then Marco just he laid an egg. It was just there was nothing good about that game that he did. You know, they got a turnover, they got three first half sacks, but guess what? They didn't get in the second half. They didn't get to Daniel Jones in the second half. It's like everything. It's like they played as well as they could play in the first half, and then they reverted to basically exactly what they were offensively against Washington in the second half, only they stopped being a good defensive team.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, but you also mentioned it. Carlos Watkins is your number two interior defensive lineman, right? After LJ Collier. So LJ Collier is probably done for the season with a bicep. Unfortunate, just, you know, what it is. And hit the guy, the other, you know, free agent splash or whatever you want to call it, you know, the biggest presence in the middle, Carlos Watkins, he goes down. You know, Leki Fotu's out that game. And so all of a sudden it's, you know, and this isn't a shot, but this is, you know, we talked about it game one. How fantastic the rotation was, right?
Kevin Strong and Jonathan Ledbetter had to play most of the game. They played 50 right. snaps each, and then no one else played more than, what was it, like 20?
Yeah. Well, and you look at it, I mean, they lost 70 – or sorry, hold on. I got to get this right. They lost 87 snaps combined between – well, I guess we'll call it 77 because Watkins got 10 snaps in. They lost – 77 snaps from the first game because LJ Collier played 37, Carlos Watkins played 33, and Leki Fotu played 17. Like, we talked about this. This roster is razor thin. So, yeah, Ledbetter playing 50 snaps, Kevin Strong playing 50 snaps, Dante Stills playing 18
Dante
snaps.
Stills playing his first NFL game, and then Eric Banks playing his, fourth or fifth NFL game.
Like, I'm sorry. You're not going to beat teams. Like, it's just not going to happen. And at the end of the day, I applaud what Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rallis have done. But at the end of the day, too, they're hamstrung with talent. Like, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. Offensively, Dobbs, like, what is it with the second half? For like, and even then, it was they were good on that first drive, and then everything stopped. Was that more play calling? Like, was that more coaching, or was that more players letting up a little bit? Or simply,
yeah, I think it's a combination.
Yeah, because
I mean that's what I said. It is like, you break down what Dobbs did. He looked really good, and then all of a sudden he couldn't. Like you said, he couldn't do anything. It's getting there. That's what I said. It's just getting there. It's taking time. I mean, I thought Trey McBride, looked good. Zach Ertz looked okay.
Yeah, Ertz moved much better than he did in the first game.
I mean, and you joked about it, I think, on Twitter.
Yes, I think it was in the group chat. It looked like Ertz was going to be on pace for 100 catches for 500 yards.
Yeah, but, and then I think you joked about Keyonte Ingram on Twitter that he finally had positive yards.
Yes, right? Yes, he is now at 8 carries for 2 yards this season. And that took
so,
yeah,
and so it's just, it's tough, and Amari DiMercato doesn't really offer. Let's put it this way: if Marquise Brown and Rondale Moore aren't making plays in space, they have nothing explosive. Nothing. Like, we know who and what James Conner is. He's not an explosive player. He's a grinded out, and he's great at it. I don't want anybody to think I'm saying this is in a negative way.
But he doesn't have the whole. He's not a home run threat. Like, if he busts for into the open field, he can get 20 yards.
Right. And he's going to get chased down from behind. But you look at it, Trey McBride is, kind of a possession guy. Zach Ertz is purely a possession guy now. So, like, all of a sudden, when it's, DiMercato and Michael Wilson and Trey McBride and Zach Ertz on the field together, you're like, ugh. Like, that's just the reality, because it's like, all right. And, it's just one of those things that it's unfortunate, but, against a team like even a team that's probably only going to win 6 games all year, that's still better than what this iteration of the Cardinals is. I mean, literally your 2 best players, Kyler Murray and Buda Baker, are not in this game. I mean, if you take away Daniel Jones on offense and Dexter Lawrence on defense, and you put Buda Baker and Kyler Murray back in, the Cardinals are favored by 6.
Yeah,
probably. Like, and so that's just what it is. Like, you just, at the end of the day, against even average to slightly below average teams, this team lacks too much talent to be able to play poorly in the second half.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the good things, because it wasn't all bad by any means. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. There were good things. There were definitely good things, especially in the first half. And I think one of the things was how much Josh Dobbs is endearing himself to his teammates. Like, teammates are legitimately rooting for him. They kind of believe in him. And in the first half, he looked like a competent quarterback, which was very nice to see. It was more than dinks and dunks. He made some nice timing throws. He did miss Ertz down the field, and that's 2 weeks in a row that's a missed touchdown. He had the hit stick touchdown run. There was a lot to like about what Dobbs played. You kind of feel like that probably was his ceiling, right? Like what he did in the first half was basically the absolute best we'll ever get from Joshua Dobbs.
Yeah, that's probably the best you'll ever see Dobbs play. And you know, that's against, you know, we'll preview this on Thursday, but against the Cowboys, that's a 20, that's a 27 to like 14 type of game, right? In the negative, right? Like maybe you get 17, but like that's the type of game that is like, you're not going to get 28. and so that's what you have to look at. Like you can't expect more from Dobbs. You can expect more from other players and hope that Dobbs is able to hold up enough. And just, you know, I was disappointed more than I was surprised. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I thought, you know, and I will recant what I said about Dobbs, the playmaker, because guess what he showed? He showed he can make plays. He can make plays with his legs. He made some plays with his arm. And I think what we saw on Sunday was, okay, I will concede, he was probably a better option than Colt McCoy. If he can play to the, because Colt McCoy wouldn't have played better than Dobbs played the first half. That was best case scenario for any non-Kyler Murray quarterback than what we were going to see. And we saw that, which was, it was so optimistic. It's just that how quickly it fell apart after that first drive in the third quarter and then defensively. But I liked, again, you know, I liked defensively the pressure they were getting in the first half. They got the turnover. You know, note, three of the prop bets came true. Daniel Jones, the over on the rushing total, the Daniel Jones interception total, and then Matt Prater, over 5.5 points. So three of my four prop bets, the only one didn't hit was Connor in his receiving yards. And so there were definitely, that's not a positive. That's just, that has nothing to do with the game. That's just making me sound smart.
Bro, we made so much money. People tailed us. I even wrote about it. We hit 2+ money numbers. That's crazy. Like, I don't think people realize, and if you parlayed all three of those,
yes,
that was like a huge day at the office. And that's what I try to tell people, is like, every once in a while, you know, you should follow us on these things. We both write a weekly prop bet, and you know, to get those numbers in. And as I said, like, the Jones on DraftKings was +150. The Prater, I had him over 1.5 field goals made, which is over 5.5 points. You know, I know extra points count as field goals, but I had him over 1.5 field goals made. That was +120. So, nice. Like, those are, like, I don't think people realize how much those pay out.
Well, and then, you know, I got greedy personally because I've now, through 2 weeks of my underdog column for Sportsbook Wire, I'm 6-0 on those picks. But I did get greedy on the column. I wasn't brave enough to call for the Cardinals on the money line for the Giants. But I did personally wager the Cardinals money line on the Giants, and I was disappointed because I thought for sure they were going to win that game. They thought they were going to win. But well, at the same time, I didn't think – I was expecting Buddha to play. I was expecting Buddha to play. I was expecting Lecky to play. And so when you go into that game with you were down 5 defensive starters.
That's huge.
That was less than optimal. 4 defensive starters, you enter the game with that. So no Buddha, no Lecky, no Josh Woods, no LJ Collier, because he had, and then you lost Carlos Watkins,
yeah.
So yeah, that was that you but, were
by the way, anybody that's wondering, that's a +950 parlay. So, like, Jess and I would have paid for a week of groceries for you.
Yeah. Other positives, I mean, you look at – I thought they played – like, they played well in front of the home crowd. They played well in front of the whole crowd, except then the second half happened. But that's not the part I want to focus on, is that as well in the second half, they then – when New York down when it scored, they went and responded. So they had the 20-0 lead going into halftime. They give it the touchdown. Then they bounce back, immediately score the touchdown, get the two-point conversion to go up 28-7. That was great. It was just everything went downhill from there. Maybe just simply put, they played probably, I guess that's probably the fair thing to say, up till the end of the first half, they played as perfect a game as you could expect from this iteration of the Cardinals.
Yeah, and that's the expectation. And that's the thing is, it kind of sucked that they blew that in the first half. And like you said, their first offensive drive, and then couldn't do anything after that. But, it's not unexpected, because sustainability, again, comes with guys, right? Like, it comes with talent. I thought, if you look at this as a tale of two halves, I thought the offensive line in the first half looked good. I think you have to be extremely, and it's probably going to come, crashing is probably a strong word, but it's probably going to come back to bite this statement, but you have to be super excited about Paris Johnson.
He does.
Absolutely fantastic.
He looks so good out there.
Now the next 2 weeks are going to be
animal. Micah Parsons. We're going to talk about him in the next show, but oh my gosh. Paris Johnson, Micah Parsons. Watch. Now, granted, you probably like the where Micah Parsons is a extreme disruptor is the way that they stunt him. So he doesn't, there's a lot of times he will not simply just go up and rush against that right tackle. They're moving him around, which makes him even harder. But yeah, that's for Thursday's show. Paris looks so good. He looks really good. DJ looked good. I think Hernandez was fine, but yeah, Wilkinson, that was, and we're supposed to be talking about the good. Elijah Wilkinson, two false starts in a row. That was dumb. That was dumb.
Well, that's just a guy that understands that he's outmanned. And that's, I'm not saying that's on the coaches or anything like that, or but it's just at the end of the day, like, Elijah Wilkinson's going, oh man, Dexter Lawrence has been kicking my butt. Like, I gotta make sure I'm ready for this. And he just, he wasn't, let's be honest. He wasn't, and it showed up. I mean, we'll talk about them in the worst players of the game, but or like the, the things that didn't look good. But like, when you have two starters on both sides, on either side of the ball, that are as bad as Wilkinson and Wilson were, like, it's just like, it's very, very hard to win games. Like, you can get away with Lecky Fotu playing his 15 snaps and playing that poorly, or a Jesse Lucchetta or something like that. Dante Stills didn't particularly play well, but you can't, two primetime starters, you can't win games that way. I think, again, it wasn't as good as the first game, and we didn't expect it to be, right? Like, we did not expect the pass rush to be great, but I was disappointed, that they weren't able to do a little more. Kaiser White had a sack this game. Gardeck had a sack, and then did Watkins have a sack before he left injured?
No, Watkins had his sack last week, so Gardeck had one.
And then Collins had one.
That's, yeah. Collins had a half sack split is what that ended up looking like. Let me pull the stat sheet up. It was he and Demakeji got half a sack, and Ben and Kaiser had the other one. So he and Demakeji got credit for the half sack on that one.
And you have to, again, acknowledge the offensive line. They had zero sacks. Like, so that's a plus, but when things started to go bad, you started to see the
he did interior. End up getting hit six times. Jobs did.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was mostly in the second half. And it was Dexter Lawrence and O'Shane Zimene. I'm going to butcher that.
That guy, the other guy.
Zimenez. Yeah. So, they had a field day basically in the second half. And again, the disheartening thing about that was those weren't like plays where you're like, or I shouldn't say plays, but those were situations where you're like, oh, it's okay if we don't get this because, you know, we're ahead by three touchdowns, but then you don't get it. And you're like, ah, it would have been, you know, that would have been a nice play. And it just, it was interesting that they were just, they struggled at those, at that time when usually, I mean, usually when you're playing from behind, yes, there is a desperation up from the other side, but there's also a feeling or a calmness from the winning team, right? That like, okay, we don't have to panic. And it just seemed like it was almost too much. It was almost like, it was like, oh, we've got this. Like, it's three touchdowns. And then the sense of urgency was lacking. That's probably the best way to put it. They lacked a sense of urgency because it seemed like in the first half, especially, like, they were like, hey, let's keep building this lead. Let's keep putting it on them. And it just felt like a different team in the first half. And then they came out, got punched in the mouth, and they kind of looked around like, it was almost like a question of, can we sustain this, as opposed to, hey guys, you know, it's one series, like it's no big deal. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I think that one we have to kind of lay on Petzing, because Kent Summers going to mention it, but you know, they were coaching scared not to lose a lead. And that's exactly what they did. And I know the success that they had was really predicated upon the fact that they were able to move the ball in the run game, and they were getting explosive plays from James Conner, and that got bottled up. But they also stopped kind of, yeah, it's everything shut down. And I'm going to give credit to guys like Dexter Lawrence, because it felt like he was a non-factor in the first half, and as I was watching as things happen in the fourth quarter, it felt like he was blowing things up. And he didn't have a massive statistical game. He finished with, what, four total tackles, two quarterback hits, a tackle for loss, and I bet that was primarily in fact, I can kind of check. Oh, they only show. So he didn't reach that total in the first half. Most of those stats came in the second half, because, you know, you can look at that. No one had, so they don't show anyone that would had three tackles or more. So his production came in the second half. So I'm going to go with that. But yeah, that's, you know, it gave you hope. And we're going to talk about this, but this is not the worst team in the league. And I'm still a little bitter about it, because Rankings has had them 32. All, like, you're not watching the games. Like, yes, they are an 0-2 team. Everyone expected that, but look at the football they're playing. They're not playing terrible football. They're playing overmanned. They're undermanned, and they're getting effort. But the Bears look completely lost. The Texans look atrocious. The Panthers don't look like they know how to do anything. This is not the worst team in football. They're in a better place. They're in a better place than people think that they're at.
Well, and the thing is, the unfortunate thing is that they have a terrible schedule.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we're going to get to that. We're going to get that.
But, and so that, I think, plays into things, is because they're like, well, they didn't win those two games, which were probably their most winnable games, until, you know, week 10. And so people are like, oh, they're the worst team in football. And it's like, well, they might have the worst record in football, but like, are we basing it off the record, or are we basing, and let's be honest, a lot of people aren't watching the Cardinals either.
Like, no, we're the only crazy people doing that, because their Cardinals games aren't getting shown anywhere other than the, you know, regional areas.
I think we also need to just mention real quick on some positives. You know, Marquise had 9 for 82,
yes,
and a touchdown. Zach Ertz had two. He's very Larry Fitzgerald 2000, was it 15, 16? But he had 12 for 77. And then, you know, Not in the game. That's obviously
so far. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's very Larry Fitzgerald.
Right. Like I was saying, he's going to have 100 catches for 500 yards.
Right. I mean, geez.
Like, he's got 12 catches and he's just got to stay healthy. Remember Zach Ertz in 11 games 2 years ago tied the Cardinals franchise single season record for tight end receptions with 57 in 11 games. Last year, he just shattered. He's going to have that by three quarters of the way through the season. He's going to have 80 catches this year.
Yeah, and he had 6 for 56 in the game. So he had a great game.
Yeah, that game went. And mind you, he was wide open down the field. Like Dobbs just plain missed him. He'd had a touchdown. That would have been big.
And that would have been early, too, because that's the one they missed the field goal on.
Yeah, yeah. They would have had a freaking 27-0 lead in the first half. That would have been stupid.
Yeah, but instead, you know, it ends up being what it is. But it was good to see, you know, Marquise had 6 for 54. But that's the thing is, like, you have explosive guys like Marquise and Rondell. But, like, again, that's where Dobbs struggles, right? He struggles to get the ball into explosive hands. And so that's why you kind of see things play out like they did in the game.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's talk about the injuries. It's impacting them, and it's going to impact moving forward. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Spencer of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Injuries. Cardinals really couldn't afford to have injuries, and now they've got them. Here's the status that we know. LJ Collier hit injured reserve. His season's basically, like, we can assume his season is done. Biceps injury, surgery needed. It's going to be a long, he won't be back. Then Lekki Fotu is out. Had a shoulder injury. Josh Woods out with an ankle injury. Carlos Watkins, biceps injury. We're going to have to watch that because biceps injuries, those are tricky.
It just depends on severity of tear.
If you need surgery, done. You're done, which would really, really be difficult because who are the two defensive linemen that we were basically counting on? Watkins by far the most accomplished defensive lineman on the team, and then Collier, who had the most potential to be decent. Done. And now, Buda Baker in a hamstring, on injured reserve, going to miss the next four games. That's a tough blow, and that's a frustrating thing. Because remember Buda talking about the offseason, how he never wanted to miss games again? But he's, after 1 week, tweaks his hamstring, does something his hamstring in practice, and boom. Now he's out for the next month.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate. And this is a team that we talked about. It's razor thin. It played a huge, you know, result in this game and the loss. And it's going to impact them for the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, however long Boot is out. So it's just, you know, it's an unfortunate reality that this team is going to have to continue to fight and deal with as they try to get back into a good spot, as they fight and claw to compete, because the next 2 weeks are going to be ugly. I mean, it's just, and if they're going to be in games, and we'll talk about this on Thursday, they're going to have to make them ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, look
about that defensive line. We didn't think this defensive line was going to be, we were really concerned about the defensive line with Collier and Watkins. Now take Collier and Watkins out. Now you're looking at a starting lineup, if Lekki's back this week, of Jonathan Ledbetter, Lekki Fotu, and either Kevin Strong or
Dante Stills.
Or maybe they, rather than playing Stills, they bring up Eric Bakes. But oh my gosh. That's not a defensive line you can even begin to trust. And it kind of goes against kind of what they, you know, Stills and Banks, they didn't want to play them. They didn't want to play them. Well, I think they played them probably about the amount that they wanted to play them. The issue is that Strong and Ledbetter had to play far more. They had to play far more than that they expected to. They kind of want, I'm guessing they probably want them in the 35 to 40 maxing out in terms of snaps like they did in week one. And then, you know, without Buda, obviously, that's huge. I do think that they did get decent play from their safety trio, and we did learn that even with Buda out, guess what? Jalen Thompson's going to continue. He will be their slot, their nickelback, playing in the slot. And now they're going to rely on Kayvon Wallace and Andre Sacheri, which is less than ideal, but at minimum, both Wallace and Sacheri are sound in terms of knowledge of the defense, which means in terms of safety play, which is what you need your back end to not bust coverages. And so while they may not be playmakers, they will not be the reason or shouldn't be the reason that they make major mistakes.
No, but we've seen it 2 weeks in a row, especially with Kayvon Wallace. Is he just a step slow athletically, and that's why he's, you know, a guy that was available when he was available and how he was available.
Well, and that's what you it's amazing about Buddha. Like, you watch him play. Everyone talks about his play speed. You know what that is that he understands, like, his understanding of angles, his athleticism, and how he diagnoses a play. When you see him move, what you will never see him do is hesitate.
Right.
And misstep. But you don't see him hesitate or misstep. Like, he knows the angle he's supposed to take, and he's a missile. You don't see that from – you don't see that with that sort of play speed. You might see a slower reaction time. You might see a slower reaction time. But, like, you see it from Buddha immediately, and then he is an absolute missile. There's no way to replace that.
No, and it's just, you know, it's tough. And, you know, the injuries are what they are. You can't dwell on them, but you can understand that they're going to play a massive role in how this team ends up looking over the course of the next, you know, 4 weeks at least. And understand that it's going to play a massive role in their ability to be competitive, because, you know, for as much as everybody was joking or saying this team was tanking, they weren't tanking. But it's also obvious that at this point that they were hoping that these guys stayed healthy, because they were going cheap, which is a form of tanking. And instead, now they just don't have any, I don't want to say any, because that's, you know, discrediting these guys, but they lack a lot of talent.
Absolutely. And
you know, one more thing on that, when you look at it, and obviously it's two games in, so things are going to change by the buckets over the next, you know, 16 weeks of the season. The good thing is that with Carolina and Houston also being incredibly, incredibly bad, that the Cardinals and Bears are like, hey, we're in a good spot, right? At least we didn't trade for those guys. And it's also interesting that the guy that everybody wanted the Cardinals to hire, and a guy you and I both were high on in Sean Payton, he right now has the first overall pick in the draft, right?
Yeah. Coming next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk Unload. Let's look at the schedule. When do we think the Cardinals will get their first game, the first win? That's coming next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, Best Our Cardinals Talk on the web. The Cardinals, hopefully, like, it looks like it's probably going to be that their Cardinals aren't going to win a game till Kyler gets back, unless something weird happens. But let's look at the schedule. Okay, they had a couple of tough games early on. Obviously, Washington, a physical team, the Giants coming off a playoff year. But look at this stretch of games: Week 3 at home against the Dallas Cowboys, Week 4 on the road against the San Francisco 49ers, Week 5 at home against the Cincinnati Bengals, Week 6 on the road against the Rams, who look much better than anyone expected, Week 7 they are on the road against Seattle, then Week 8 they are at home against the Baltimore Ravens, Week 9 on the road Cleveland, Week 10 at home against the Atlanta Falcons, and then on Week 11 they hit the road to play Houston. It is not completely out of the realm of possibility of them going being 0-10 going into Houston. Do I think they're going to be 0-10? No, but there's no way to we're definitely saying there's no way to predict. Even a crazy person wouldn't pick the Cardinals to beat the Cowboys, right?
No, I think you kind of pencil in, obviously it's the NFL, anything can happen in any week. That's why there's been one undefeated team in the history of the game. But I think you pencil in losses in week 3 and 4.
Yeah, they look so good. Week 5, Cincinnati doesn't look good, but Joe Burrow come alive in the second half against Baltimore.
But there also is talk that he could be missing for the next couple of weeks with that calf re-injured. I have a feeling that's just hullabaloo because he's been awful after signing the biggest contract in the history of the NFL. But, you know, if he is, Joe Goodberry, who I think has been with SB Nation and kind of does his own thing now, he said if he was to miss, you know, it could be 2 weeks. And then if it's as serious as some people think, it could be 8 weeks, which means they would put him on the IR. So yeah, something to watch, because week 5, you look at it, and you know, like you said, if Burrow's there and they're finally tracking in the right direction, okay, you know, you kind of whatever. But if Burrow ends up on the IR, that's a game at home.
That's one. Please, and that would be maybe Kyler's return. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
And then, like you said, at LA and Seattle, both teams are equal to one another, but they're road NFC West games.
And LA looks way better than anyone expected.
Right.
And without Cooper Kupp, look at that. Puka Nacua, a guy that we talked about leading up to the draft who wouldn't have been a nice pickup. He's got 24 catches in 2 games. That's a rookie record. Tutu Atwell had 119 yards in week 1. He had 7 for 77 in week 2. The Rams are getting big production from two guys that no one expected to produce, and that's no Cooper Kupp. Cam Akers is apparently on his way out. And yeah. And they, you know, thank you Sean McVay for calling for that last second field goal to go from a 10-point game to a 7-point game, because I covered the spread on that one. I don't know why they did that. But thank you.
And I was the opposite. So, you know, screw you, Sean McVay. But yeah, and then, you know, Seattle, like you said, like they're not as good as we expected, but they're also, you know, still better than the Cardinals. And then Baltimore just looks re-energized with the return or with the addition of Todd Monken. They're hurting, so it's going to be interesting to see. But you pencil them in for 9 wins every year and then just kind of go from there, right? Like, that's just who they are. And so then you get to at Cleveland.
That's
Cleveland. They're just, I mean.
They're good. They're really good defensively.
They're good defensively, but Deshaun Watson, you know, I text a buddy last night. So we record Tuesday night, obviously. And then, so I text my buddy on Monday night and I said, obviously you have to see him back and see if he's healthy and everything. But I can't imagine watching those four teams play last night, the Panthers and the Saints, and then the Steelers and the Browns, and anybody definitively being like, it's, you know, you have to move on from Kyler Murray, because Bryce Young doesn't look good.
Nope.
You know, Derek Carr is incredibly average and he's being paid a whole lot of money. Kenny Pickett does not look good, and Deshaun Watson looks like hot dog breath. Like, and he's got the richest guaranteed contract in NFL history. Like, and the Browns owe the Texans their first round pick this year. Like, this is it can get worse. Like, you could, whether or not, you know, you think Caleb Williams is the next Patrick Mahomes, whatever, Like, there's literally no guarantee. So unless you're like, hey, we're getting Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson, like one of the guaranteed better quarterbacks than Kyler Murray in the league, like, I'm just not quick to be like, yeah, you got to move on. It's just how bad the quarterback play has been through 2 weeks. And we talked about it. Even Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow has looked awful the first 2 weeks of the season. There's not I saw a stat, and it's really kind of a funny stat. I want to make sure I get it right. So it's called the Guppy quarterback. I think he wanted to say something else, but he was trying to be nice. But they call it the Guppy quarterback. And it is A dot, which is average depth of target, multiplied by average time to throw. So the league average is around 18. Joe Burrow is at 9.
Oh my gosh.
So he is literally terrified to throw the ball down the field. And it shows, like, if you watch that Bengals-Ravens game, the amount of passes behind the line of scrimmage would make Cliff Kingsbury blush. Like, and let's be honest, the Bengals probably went into the season with what many people perceived as the best wide receiver group in the NFL.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, all of that is to say, like, let's just not be like, you got to move on, because it can't. We're Cardinals fans. We should know better than anybody. It can get worse. Like, it's not a guarantee.
Last year, which was a crap show, got worse against New England. Remember that? It got worse against New England, and then after Kyler Murray got hurt, they went to Mexico, and I guess that was before that. So it was a bad season. They have a coach allegedly grope a woman in Mexico, fire him. Then Kyler Murray gets hurt. Then, oh my gosh.
Well, yeah. And here's one last thing on that. Ask yourself, without Kyler Murray, how many games they've won since Kyler Murray got injured? They're 0-7 since Kyler Murray got injured.
It's okay. So let's do this through week 10. Okay. Let's set the over under at 1.5 wins. Do the Cardinals, do you take the over or the under on that total? Still not knowing which week Kyler comes back, but between now and when they play the Houston Texans in week 11, Is it over or under 1.5 wins?
I would take the under. I think they can win one game. I think they can beat the Falcons and the Browns with Murray. I don't know if they can with Dobbs.
And I'm trying to think. I think we had, because I had them starting 1-7. So if I'm going to go with my prediction, I'm going to say over and they'll win two games. I don't know when that first week's going to come. I don't know when the first win's going to come. But, you know, stranger things have happened. But, yeah. But it this stretch, in when we talk about the Dallas game, it's going to be a laugher, because, whew, that game is tough. San Francisco's going to be tough. San Francisco will be boring tough. The Bengals is a question mark. The Rams, question mark. Seattle, question mark, but at least not laughable. Baltimore looks like, well, if Kyler's back, that'll be fun. Cleveland's a question mark. Atlanta's hopeful. You know, you don't believe in what Atlanta is right now. You can't.
Well, I mean, they're a team that plays kind of how the Cardinals do, and they're just, again, a little more talented.
They're just better. They're just a little better. All right. With that, let's wrap up this edition of the Rise of Syria podcast. Best of Cardinals talk. And that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again. We'll record Thursday night, so you'll probably hit it in your device or in your subscription, however you do that. Hopefully you all are subscribing. That will come Friday during the day. I should get a Cowboys reporter, writer, podcaster, somebody, so that we can have that show on Saturday, So ideally, we'll have two more shows the rest of the week. But thanks for listening, as always. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rule. We'll be back in again in a couple days. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.